Welcome to the AquariMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 114, recorded May 21st, 2012.
Greetings, all!
Hello! Welcome to another fun-filled aquatic episode. We hope we all enjoyed the interview last week. No, wait, we didn't interview somebody. We were interviewed.
Yeah, we were, but it hasn't
been
released yet. Sorry,
I had that backwards. So you haven't enjoyed it yet, either.
No, but Pet Tech Podcast, it should be coming up. So
and
we'll keep you posted on that.
This week, we are going to hear from Kuabo in Connecticut. Did I say that right?
I don't know. Let's assume you did.
Okay. Let us know if we didn't. Tony, New York, and Charlie in South Carolina, and Nigel in Bridport.
Right. So, let's start out with Kuabo.
Okay. He says, I am culturing amphipods in the insectarium at my university and have been experiencing really high mortality rates. They are for a research experiment, so I do not intend on feeding them to any fish. Right now we keep them in open plastic containers with a little bit of gravel, rolled up netting for shading, and we used air stone filters. They were harvested from Gardner's Lake, Connecticut. I've been noticing that whenever a filter stops working in a culture and it does not function for a day or two, a lot in that culture die. I was hoping you could tell me what causes high mortality rates with amphipods. I think it may be because of the malfunctioning filters, but are there any other possible reasons for the high mortality rate I've been getting lately?
Okay. Well, great question. First of all, I would ask a little bit more about the filters, because the use of the term air stone filters leads me to believe that either it is a type of filter that is powered by an air stone, such as a box filter, or perhaps under gravel filter. And it could be just air stones, which are not filters per se, but can be used to, like in the previous two examples, drive filtration, and can indirectly, because they're moving water and oxygenating, assisting in the oxygenation of the water, can power biological filtration, as it were, by just making sure that the bacteria get enough oxygen. So,
okay.
And it could be either one of those two scenarios, or three scenarios, I don't know which one. So, it could be of use to find that out. But let me just say that I think when the filters don't function for a day or two, this is what I think is happening. The biofiltration going on, I am assuming the containers have cycled over a period of time. And so the air stones are indeed contributing to the oxygenation in the tanks and therefore allowing biological filtration to take place on the surfaces in the tank, including the gravel and the netting, so on. And that when they stop functioning for a day or two, this causes a die-off of those bacteria, which results in several problems, one of them being an increase of ammonia in the tank, which can be very detrimental to the amphipods. And another issue would be that the reduction in oxygen would just make the issue worse, because when the bacteria die, they can putrefy, and other types of bacteria come in that use up the oxygen during that process, and pretty soon there isn't a whole lot of oxygen going on, and very bad situation, in addition to the already serious problem of ammonia in the water. So I'm pretty confident that that's the problem. Not, you know, I'm not there, so I can't say everything for sure. I don't know all of the variables that are going on, but that, let's just say that that would be enough to account for the issue. So if you can, you know, put maybe a more dependable filtration system on there or something like that, that could help. I hope it does.
He doesn't say why the filter stops working.
Right, so I don't know what's going on there, but
it's just an old filter, or they,
if they're getting clogged, or if there's
power,
poor wiring, yeah, who knows. But hopefully that will be of use. I think that is enough to account for the problem, and eliminating the loss of power to the filters, or loss of aeration at least, will probably help.
Okay. So thank you, Kuabo. He's his first contributor, yes? First time?
First time contributor, yeah.
Okay. Oh, well, before we go any further, we have a little announcement, don't we?
We do. Before we go any further, we should mention that we have
a new video!
Yeah, we just released one on Saturday, was it? So it's up already. It'll be on the show page.
Did you post it to the Facebook page yet?
Yeah, I did. So those of you who are Facebook contributors and Facebook, whatever you
devotees.
Call it, fans, devotees, I like that better than fans, have already seen it, have already been exposed to it to some extent. Anyway, it's basically a short video I put together, a quick guide to breeding Daphnia in buckets out on your porch or wherever outside. So please give that a look if you haven't already. Some of you already have. And comment on it. Push the like button if you want to. I mean, if you like it. Because, you know, people often forget to do that, but it's a good way to promote the video. Yeah, and give feedback. If you don't like it, you don't have to push it. But, you know, there you go.
No, if they don't like it, they still have to push it.
Well, sorry. I wouldn't go that far.
Okay, who are we hearing from next?
Oh, next, I believe it's Tony.
Oh, yes, Tony. Indeed it is. Hello, Tony. Okay, so he's talking about...
Tony in New York.
Well, yes, I'm sure there's more than one Tony out there. So right. Tony in New York. There's probably more than one Tony in New York.
Oh, I'm certain of that.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Because, you know, this is a funny thing about the word probably that our friend used to say. If your grandfather didn't have any kids and your father didn't have any kids, you probably won't have any kids either. Probably.
Yeah, I believe that's a quote from English to English. I'm not certain of that, but I think it is.
I love that one. Okay, off the tangent. Fishless cycling. Yeah. What does he tell us about fishless cycling right
now? Well, we've been communicating about the fishless cycling, talking about it both on the show and in some email. And I asked him how he had been doing with the fishless cycle. And he said there hadn't been much change, and he'd been leaving the hood open for a week or so. He's been using the water conditioner we recommended.
Like 2 or 3 months or something.
It had been a long time.
I think it still wasn't done.
I don't know. I don't think it was 2 or 3 months yet, but it was getting along there. Longer than it usually takes. And he said that ammonia is staying around 3 parts per million, isn't budging. Cloudiness has developed in the 1 gallon tank, which is new, so that's probably the heterotrophic bacteria, he says. I'm going to let it all go for another week or so before introducing another variable change, either an added heater or a bacterial additive. And he said that your show was very informative on the topic and helped me focus my thinking, so thank you again for hosting. This is his question that relates to that. Suppose I do get a heater and start my culture that way, then remove the heater and let the temperature drop again to 68 or 70 degrees. Will that be an okay environment for the beneficial bacteria once they've become established, or will they go dormant and stop assimilating ammonia and nitrites?
Well, that's a good question.
That's a great question. Well, I'll tell you what. The heater, although it will speed up the cycling process in general, once you remove it, it won't go as fast as it was when it had the heater necessarily, but it will still go. We've got, you know, our goldfish tank upstairs, 37-gallon tank?
Something like that.
It doesn't have a heater, and so in the winter it gets down into the 60s, and the cycle seems to work fine. So in the summer it's a bit warmer, but so even with that, those changes in temperature, it still works.
So he should be fine.
Yep, should be fine.
Very good.
I also sent him a couple of websites for information about cycling and some things that might help troubleshoot, like there's a link that I'll put on the show page from aquariumadvice.com, an article called Tips and Tricks for Your Fastest Fishless Cycle. It talks about using...
Say that 10 times fast.
Yeah, it talks about making sure you have enough phosphate in your system to keep the bacteria going. Of course, too much phosphate can get algae going because it's often a limiting factor in algae growth. But they talk about that and how that can help with your cycle, because if you don't have any phosphate, the bacteria have a hard time. And one about troubleshooting a stalling cycle, and that's from oscarfishlover.com. And
a stalling cycle being one that's just not going
it's
anywhere,
not going
kind
anywhere,
of like
right.
Tony's is.
And it had a couple of ideas, and one of them was making sure the type of ammonia you get is pure, because there are various types of ammonia that are sold and sometimes appear to be pure, but they're not. And also,
how do you make sure? Is there an ingredient list where it actually says that?
Some of them do say, and when they say that helps, but you do have to be careful with that. Like there's the one they sell at $1. It's I don't know if it has ammonia in it or not, but it says Dollar Tree. That's what it's called. It says pure ammonia, and I wrote to the company actually to ask them if it is indeed pure ammonia with no additives of any kind, just ammonia and water.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't heard back from them yet, but I'm hoping that it is
indeed
that kind.
I think that means no.
I don't know what that means, but you have to be careful about what... I think Tony's is fine, probably, but that's just one thing that it points out. And another, it says if sometimes your bacteria get stalled, you can do, like, a large water change, like 90%. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that'll kind of kickstart things.
Just kind of restart. Mm-hmm. So those are some good suggestions for Tony, and hopefully that works out.
Yeah.
Oh, did you put the links that you sent him, did you put that on the resource page? Or the?
I'll put them on the show page.
The show page, okay. Yeah.
We don't do research pages anymore. I mean, research.
Yeah, we never did research pages.
Resource pages anymore. We do show pages now, so it's all just there in the same spot.
Okay. It's on whatever it's episode little, it comes from.
Right. Or it's a little easier to access for everybody.
I should look at the website sometime, huh?
Maybe so. Okay. What do we got next? Oh, he's interested in seeing how our beta project kicks off.
Oh, yeah, when we get that going this summer.
I like what he said here.
Here's to bubble nests.
That's cool.
That's right.
I like it when Tony, you know, he has some interesting turns of phrase that I really like. And then he actually responded again. We've been communicating by email somewhat. And he said he may try a heater sometime soon. He's planning on setting up a lot more tanks at some future time and wanted to see if he could start it without one, because he doesn't want to have to purchase a heater for every tank if he's got, you know, 15 tanks or something. And I asked him why he was doing tryops at that room temperature, you know, 68 to 70 degrees.
What are they usually like?
Well, a lot of people keep them warmer, but he said this. I mean, usually when I do it, I keep them, you know, 75 to 78 or so. Mm-hmm. And he said that he was just keeping them at his room temperature, and he had read that they're okay at 70 and may live longer at that temperature.
Oh.
So that's a good way to go with that.
We should do there's another science project for the kids.
Temperature of tryops and how it affects their growth. Yeah, I have read that a temperature gradient between night and day actually increases their growth too.
Have it cooler at night.
You put it on a timer so it's on for 8 hours, 10 hours in the day, and then it turns off at night. It cools down a few degrees.
Oh.
That can do it. So it's interesting. And he also wants to cycle his gallon tank. His 1 gallon tank, and then he's getting another one too, so he wants to make sure he really needs 3 heaters before he gets them. And of course, it is a lot harder to cycle smaller tanks.
Now, why is that? Does it have to do with
surface area?
Ta da! We need a surface area song still.
We do. It may be somewhat due to that. I don't know. I think it has there are a lot of factors going on, and I don't understand all of them why it's so much more difficult to cycle smaller tanks, but it does seem to be harder. I'm not saying it's impossible. I've heard people say it's impossible to cycle anything under 3 gallons, and I don't think that's true.
Well, that can't be true, because then nobody would have a nano tank, and we wouldn't have all these little tanks sitting around the house.
I know. I believe that they can be cycled, and I personally think that my half-gallon Daphnia tank is cycled. But
they wouldn't still be alive if it weren't, would
they? Well, it's possible to do uncycled tanks that are small, as long as you're changing enough water. Like, I do perform fairly large water changes once a week, but I should test it before I say anything, but
let's test it and then I'll
keep those
on it next week.
I've noticed that when you keep Daphnia in a tank with a lot of surface area, like I do with those green scrubby pads that I have in there, they do better. And I haven't broken down and tested the water, but
maybe little tanks just need more stuff, more surface area for the bacteria to grow on.
Maybe, and of course the oxygen in a tank like that's going to be limited, so the bacteria don't get to do as well with that.
If you put an air stone or some kind of bubbly ornament in, would that help?
Yeah, it would. So, I don't know. It's hard to tell, but it's just, I do agree that it's harder to cycle small tanks. I just don't think it's necessarily impossible. So, and he's going to see, like I said before, he may change the variables in the future, and so we'll see that. And he said that he has tried sea monkeys in the past, and he liked them, and he might try hatching them again in the future.
Very cute.
Because he really likes invertebrates, and guess what?
What?
He says he owes it to us and our show.
Oh.
That he really has this thing for invertebrates, and
that's very
cool.
Because
we do a lot of invertebrate stuff.
Yeah, we do.
And, of course, we love our invertebrates, too.
Backbone or no.
Oh, and he had a PS. He said that regarding cycling, one of his older fish books, The Goldfish, by Carlo DeVito and Gregory Scomal, that cycling can take... This is a quote from the book, from 2 to 4 months, depending upon conditions.
Wow.
And he says that he has to assume that they're considering the average cold water setup, because, you know, cold water setups are slower.
Yeah, because that's a long time.
And so that's some additional evidence that without a heater, it would work providing he's willing to wait 2 to 4 months. But, yeah, and I think it usually, in my experience, it hasn't always taken that long. In fact, I don't know if it ever has taken that long. But I often jumpstart, you know, I piggyback on some media from another aquarium or something like that. And I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the cold water obviously does make a difference, too. Upon my word, it's time for the break.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629, or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. And now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, the podcast with Icy Nelly.
And we're back from our break.
Indeed. What have we got next?
We are going to hear from Charlie in South Carolina, who sent us some things on Facebook.
Okay.
He sent in a picture of a shrimp.
Yes, he did. He sent a picture of red cherry shrimp.
He says he has 9 shrimp total. He got this one in the picture separately. He says, I've never noticed a saddle. I bought it as an adult and assume it is female due to size and shape. The other 8 smaller shrimp I received as juveniles. They've been developing saddles over the past month. And he wants to know if it's a Sakura shrimp. Could it be sterile, or is the color maybe blocking my view of the saddle? Still learning a lot about freshwater shrimp and hoping to breed them. Thanks for the help.
Okay, well, I figured, looking at the picture, it did look a lot like a female. It's hard to tell sometimes, depending on angle and position and so on, and what's showing up. I mean, if you see a saddle, you know it's a female, right? But it didn't have a saddle. I asked him if it had a dorsal stripe, and he said it did. And that's often an indication that it is a female, if it has a pronounced dorsal stripe.
Do saddles kind of come and go depending on what state they're in, or they usually
do.
Just stay? Or?
Yeah, they do come and go because the saddles are basically you're seeing the eggs developing in the ovaries.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they do come and go. And I guess one thing, though, I did think it was a female, but I wasn't entirely sure. It is there, and I don't know if that's a Sakura shrimp or not exactly. So Mick and Juliet, if you want to look at that maybe and compare, it's on the Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
Check that out. And I'll probably put it on the show page too. I have seen different color saddles in different strains of red cherry shrimp. The most common one has yellow saddles.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a group of them that had sort of not nearly as visible, sort of a muted green saddle. Because the red and the yellow really stands out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, there it is. But this didn't stand out so much, at least not for me, with my partial color blindness.
Right.
It may stand out more for others, I don't know.
You should show me next time.
Yeah. I don't even know if I have any green ones now. Maybe the yellow is a dominant trait, but of the ones that had the green saddles. And their eggs were kind of greenish, too.
Interesting. Did the shrimp come out greenish?
No. No, the baby shrimp grew up and looked like the adults. They still had the same reddish coloration. I don't know, just some allele, I guess.
That's interesting.
But, yeah, so it may be one of those cases, and it may be sterile. You know, it's hard to tell. But maybe our Sakura keepers can tell us more about that.
Yeah, they can take a look at the picture.
And then what did Charlie say after that? He did have a response, I believe, did he not?
Oh, he says, I didn't know they could have different color saddles. I bet that's it. The other females have very yellow saddles, and some now have eggs. The shrimp in the picture does have a light red to pink dorsal stripe.
Okay. Now, that's cool because that does mean that he's getting shrimp that are breeding. So
yeah.
Congratulations, Charlie. I'm glad that's working out.
That's good.
And, there was something else he said that I don't think came out in this, but it's in the original Facebook post. He says that his shrimp are grazing all the time,
mm-hmm.
but they're not, when he puts in other food, they're not that interested in it.
Maybe it doesn't taste as good as what they're
Which
grazing
is kinda
on.
Weird. Maybe. And I said that in my experience, their shrimp are usually pretty interested in food added to the tank. They don't really need to eat that much, and it could be they're getting enough as they graze. And I was wondering what kind of food he was offering, just for curiosity to see if that gave us a little bit of more information to the picture.
Did he get back to you yet?
I don't think he has.
Not yet. Okay.
Not that
so
I last time I checked Facebook. So.
Time.
Okay. And then Oh, we have another one from Tony. It
says, I wanted to thank you for the articles. Are these the articles you sent him that we already talked about?
Yeah, about the fishless cycling.
On fishless cycling, I am currently digging into the one from OscarFishLover.com and have already learned a few things. This really is the level of detail I need. Other sites I've read address the textbook case where everything just sort of works. The details on this site, I think, are going to push me toward success.
Good. Yay. And I hope they do. That it will be cool. If that works out, I really hope so.
And then Nigel left us a little comment about, we'd been talking about gel food recipes, right?
Yeah, he had asked about gel food recipes. So well, actually, what he asked about
refresh
was...
Refresh us on that.
Yeah, he was asking about different foods you can give mbunas and other, you know, Rift Lake and African cichlids.
Mm-hmm.
And I suggested gel food, and I sent him a recipe that was available on Wet Web Media. And he said that he... And this was maybe a couple of days ago when he sent this one, said that he just made some, and they seem to really like it. Thanks, Russ and Kelly, as I hate feeding the same food all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm glad it's working out for him. I'm glad they enjoy it. I know that when I've made gel food, the fish usually attack the stuff. It seems to be pretty tasty. So
it's Jell-O.
Yeah.
It's because we have Utah fish.
Didn't Utah once win an award?
It has like a state Jell-O day
popularity
or
contest
something.
Or something. Anyway, yeah. So the fish like Jell-O. That's good. I guess Jell-O is a brand trade name, and we really should say gelatin for this. But yeah,
gelatin
they like
flavored dessert.
But they like gel food, so we're glad Nigel's fish enjoy it. And I think that's all for this week. Next week, if all goes well with the technology, we will be doing a podcast with Mick in Carnforth, UK, on Breeding Mouth, Brooding Bittas. The long-awaited podcast that we're finally figuring out a way to be able to make it work. So,
and the one we were on Pet Tech, when that's up, we'll let you guys know.
Yeah, we'll keep you posted on both of those.
I'm sure we'll post a link to it on the Facebook page.
We will indeed. So, in the meantime,
may the fish
be with you. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.